24. Vecina turned her head as the first stroke whistled through the air and cut into the soldier's back. There was an audible intake of breath from the ranks, but no man moved. She could stop it if she wanted to. It would take little effort to call forth a wind to swirl the ash and dust, so that it was all but impossible to see, and to keep it that way until sense prevailed. She allowed herself a moment to enjoy that thought, knowing full well that she would do nothing.
One.
It was Darragh. Regimental Sergeant Major Lorien, she corrected herself bitterly, calling out the lashes. She thought her anger with Kanawha intense, but now she found herself growing more furious as the other man who had expressed interest in her affections compounded his culpability in this atrocity.
"Don't be too hard on them, dear," a gravelly voice said in her ear. "They all follow orders."
Vecina started and turned to see Raleigh standing right beside her. She was adept at sensing the presence of others, yet the old woman had walked up beside her as insubstantial as a shadow on a moonless night.
"Hard on who?"
Vecina asked, flinching as the second lash left a pink welt running diagonally across the soldier's back. His shoulders rose for a second, and his head rocked back and forth, but no sound escaped his lips. The flogger appeared more affected, weaving on his feet and looking increasingly ill.
"Them. All of them," Raleigh said, casting a hand toward the regiment. "It's a hard life, being a soldier. Most of them are illiterate louts, thieves, drunkards, and worse. And that's just the officers, mind you."
A tiny laugh escaped Vecina's lips before she could stop it. Several of her father's Mirafant drivers looked at her in shock.
"This is no laughing matter," Vecina said, glaring first at the drivers, then at Raleigh.
The old woman had pulled her hood down so that her wild gray hair wreathed her head like a cloud, revealing portions of a weather-beaten face as tough as any bark. She held a small leather-bound booklet open in one hand and a quill in the other. She didn't smile, but the amusement in her voice was unmistakable.
"It never is. Yet it's one of the most absurd contradictions in the world today. Look at them," Raleigh said, pointing with the quill toward the regiment. "Boys, most of them. I'd wager more have seen the inside of a man's skull than have seen the inside of a woman's bedchamber. They're trained to kill, to rip and rend, and it sometimes takes rough measures to keep them in check. We create monsters of a sort, but we need them, and we need them to be vile and heartless at times, because it's them, boys and rogues all, that stand between us and the monsters we didn't create."
Raleigh nodded to herself and began writing.
"So you condone this?" Vecina asked, genuinely surprised.
She had heard many of Raleigh's stories, and always thought her more concerned with the well-being of the troops than this. Raleigh looked up from her writing and shrugged her shoulders.
"It doesn't matter if I do or don't. My job is to record what I see so my readers understand what happens out here."
She peered out at Vecina from a tangle of hair, her blue eyes clear and unblinking.
"The quill, after all, is mightier than the musket. It may just be that my readers will decide that there are better ways than this," Raleigh said,
turning away from the flogging and heading away from the spectacle.
"And I would not be disappointed if they did."
"Does that include enlightening them to the injustices of oppressing other people?" Vecina asked as another lash bit into flesh.
The pain of the elf being whipped was palpable, even without her heightened abilities. She felt compelled to watch the next stroke, but willed herself to follow the old woman instead.
"A lesser of two evils, I should think," Raleigh said as she put distance between them and the regiment. "The Empire, for all its arrogance and greed, is at its core concerned with the welfare of all the races."
She raised her hand before Vecina could object.
Yes, dear, that still doesn't make it right, I know, and were it a simpler time I would support you fully in your endeavors. But this is not that time.
Support me in my endeavors? Vecina asked, a sudden chill racing through her body. She looked to see who might have heard, but of course they were alone among the vines. Now Raleigh did smile and rubbed her nose with her quill.
My little witch, you have a good heart and a strong mind, but you have much to learn about subtlety. The prince is oblivious to most things, and Kanawha has his own concerns. But if you continue shouting about the evils of the Empire, I suspect someone will eventually take an interest in you, and it won't be friendly.
Vecina's heart raced, but she forced herself to stay calm. The flogging that had so disturbed her was now just one more indignity brought about by a corrupt power. There is a rebellion growing in the north. If the Star of Silra is there, then it is the Empire that should worry. Raleigh cackled softly and placed a hand on Vecina's arm. It was cool and light, and gave away nothing of her emotions.
The Empire is worried, or the Iron Elves wouldn't be here now. But the refinding of the Star is but a small piece of the puzzle. The Shadow Monarch has delved deep in her high forest, too deep even for the elves of the Long Watch to contain whatever she's done. Everything is coming back, the good, the bad, and the very, very bad. With the Star and the Iron Elves come rocks and ferrogs, and who knows what else. It is a dangerous time to be politicking.
All this confirmed Vecina's suspicions, yet she was still taken aback. The Star is ours. With it my people can be free. It is a risk worth taking. Raleigh turned away for a moment as a groan carried to them from the prisoner. She made a clucking sound with her tongue and began walking again, writing furiously in her book as she did so. Vecina tried to read what she was writing, but the script was neither Empire nor any other she recognized. Raleigh spoke while still writing.
The prince means to take it for himself, and from him it will find its way to her.
Vecina kicked a vine out of their way, and then put a hand to her mouth in surprise at what she had done. So he'll run back to the queen with it, so she can add it to their larder of stolen treasure? Raleigh stopped walking, closing her book with a snap and tucking it away within the folds of her cloak.
The other her, dear. The other her.
She turned and began walking back toward the yew, the sound of another lash punctuating the air as she did so. Vecina hurried to catch up. Sweat was already rolling down her face, and the nape of her neck was steaming beneath the thick coil of her hair. Raleigh, she noticed with annoyance, was unaffected.
Kanawha carries with him a piece of her mountain. I feel the Shadow Monarch's presence here, and it is growing. Kanawha should never have accepted it. It is a trap.
Raleigh stuck the quill behind her right ear and spread her arms wide as if addressing a congregation.
If you'll forgive an old hack her purple prose, dark clouds are gathering, and she is at the eye of the coming storm.
She tilted her head toward Vecina and lowered her voice.
Yes, it is a trap. It never ceases to amaze me that people should choose to be so blind. You are a rare one, my dear, a true child of the earth and the life force within it, in tune with all living things in a way most are not. You see what so many choose not to, that opposites exist everywhere. The sun and the moon, summer and winter, predator and prey. If God, the devil. If the stars, then a shadow monarch seeking to quench their light.
The whip cracked again, tightening the air until Vecina thought she could physically feel the bite of the lash.
Then what do we do? Vecina finally asked.
For now we bide our time and do what we can to keep these lads safe from harm. They'll be needed for more than ferrogs before too long, Raleigh answered.
They were now back to where they had stood before, and Basina cast a quick look at the Alfkainen nearby. They were all transfixed by the flogging, unused to such deliberate and cold violence. Raleigh placed a hand on her arm again.
"Steady on, child. There are many miles to go yet, and I, for one, have a few tricks up my sleeve. All the same, be careful whom you listen to. The brightness of a star is in part a reflection of the darkness that surrounds it."
Before Vecina could reply, a gasp rose from the regiment, and there was the sound of a sack of flour being thrown to a flagstone floor.
"The poor thing has fainted," Raleigh said, clucking again. "He didn't even last the 20 lashes.
The dragon leaned over him, its sulphurous breath bringing tears to his eyes. He tried to move, to run, but its great claws pinned him to the ground. The weight was crushing him, but the smell was worse. He opened his mouth to scream, but his cry was cut short as the dragon spewed a jet of molten flame down his throat.
"Told you that would see him on his pegs again."
Alwyn stumbled to his feet, knocking someone to the side, a canteen filled with drake sweat tumbling to the ground, its contents gurgling obscenely onto the dirt. His senses fought with each other over which felt more pain, and the effect almost cancelled each nauseating sensation out. Almost. His stomach roiled, his eyes watered, his head pounded, his legs wobbled, and his right shoulder and arm trembled with raw pain. The flogging. As if reading his mind, a hand grabbed hold of his left arm and steered him to a thick vine. Alwyn collapsed in front of it, leaned his back against it, and let his head hang down between his knees.
"You might want to adjust yourself there, Ally. There's womenfolk present," Imp said.
"What?"
Alwyn croaked, not recognizing his own voice.
"Fix your kerner, lad. You're showing your wares."
Alwyn focused his eyes and saw his bare legs and the cloth of the kerner bunched up by his waist. He used his left hand to tug the cloth back into place, and then looked up at the blurry figure of Yimt.
"I can't do this, Yimt. I can't be a soldier."
This time he knew the voice to be his. It spoke from his heart. The dwarf seemed taken aback for a second, then shook his head and knelt beside him. His knee bones cracked as the dwarf settled into a squat, using his shatterbow as a rest while he handed Alwyn his specs and a canteen.
"This one is just water," Yimp
said, tilting the canteen up and letting its contents dribble into Alwyn's mouth. It was warm and scummy, but it helped.
"Now you listen to me, Ally. I don't want to be hearing no more talk like that. You're shaping up to be a fine soldier. Flogging's a lousy task, that's all. I made sure everyone knew you had a case of the trots, something fierce, and that's why you keeled over like you did."
"So the entire regiment thinks I have the runs?" Alwyn asked, pulling his kerner down a little more.
"Sure," Yimt said, beaming at Alwyn. "The lads already knew you had one of them delicate constitutions. Better you think you can't keep anything in than—"
The dwarf looked suddenly embarrassed, pulling on his beard and looking everywhere but at Alwyn.
"So he thinks I'm a coward, too," Alwyn realized.
He lowered his head as another wave of nausea swept over him. The flogging was just one more example of what he should have known all along. The little elf tailor had known, and Yimt knew it, too. He was too weak to be a soldier. He actually thought he had been getting the hang of soldiering, the marching and the yelling, the lousy food and long hours standing guard. But it had all been schoolyard games compared to this. Now that the potion was in the pot, he couldn't take it. He couldn't even swing a whip 20 times at the back of an elf he had hated and feared. It was all too damn hard. He raised his head to tell Yimt so, and instead saw the major standing over him. "How are you feeling, Private?" Alwyn's self-pity vanished in a flare of white-hot anger. He lurched to his feet, raising his right arm in salute even though it shot needles into his shoulder.
"The private is fine, sir. Shall I continue whipping the prisoner?"
The major blinked and looked over at Yimt, who shrugged from a position of attention. "You completed 15 of the 20 lashes allotted for Private Critton's punishment. I have deemed that enough.
Really, sir? Only 15?
Rage gave Alwyn a courage he never thought possible. He stood up a little straighter and looked the elf right in the eye.
The corporal failed to protect the prince's tent, after all. Surely that deserves the full 20?
For a long moment, the major held Alwyn's stare, then he turned his back to him.
Arkorn, the major said, we move out in 20 minutes. You know the drill. See to it that the troops in your section have all their equipment. I don't want them shucking something they might need later just because it's heavy and the weather is hot. And make sure they all drink a full canteen of water. It's easy for a soldier to lose his head in this heat.
Alwyn glared at the officer's back, and something inside him snapped.
To hell with all of it.
He reached out a hand to grab the major by the sleeve and was hit in the stomach by a full canteen of water, knocking the breath out of him and collapsing him to his knees.
Not a problem, Major, Yimp said,
walking over to stand between Alwyn and the elf.
I'll make sure they all stay cool.
The major turned slightly and looked past Yimpt and down at Alwyn, his face giving nothing away. His one hand clutched at his chest as if holding something against his heart. Then he spun on his heel and walked away. Alwyn was still gasping for breath when Yimpt turned around and hit him on the forehead with the palm of his hand, knocking him backward onto his butt.
"What'd you do that for?"
Alwyn asked, tears coming to his eyes. That angered him even more, and he propped himself up on his elbows, ready to stand up and take a swing at the dwarf. Yimpt leaned down and brought his face in close to Alwyn's. The eyes that had seemed forever twinkling with mirth and mischief were now cold and clear.
"That was to knock some sense into you," Yimpt said, his voice cool. "What do you think, you can just quit? We're out in the middle of the wilds now, lad. Oh, I know what they say about the little mad one. But let me tell you something. I've survived a lot worse than this when others around me got put in the ground. Life's bloody tough," Yimpt continued, jabbing a stout finger into Alwyn's chest. "It's about time you grew up and got used to that. Out here, you don't just turn in your kit and scamper off to mother. Out here, you're either one of us, or you're one of them."
"One of who?" Alwyn asked.
Yimpt shook his head in disgust and stood up. He shouldered his shatter bow and rested his hand on the hilt of his drukhar.
"The dead. Ask Mary."
With that, he turned and walked away, leaving Alwyn feeling more alone and unsure of anything than he ever had in his life.